And I got out. I come running back to you. I come running back to you. Yeah, I come running back to you.
Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia's people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. This is Wayne Bennett, and this is episode 105. And I'd like to thank Nick Durham and the Alabaster Boxer Group for their intro song. And it's July the 5th, 2023. My guest today is a successful businessman, a very talented musician, and a good friend, Bobby Holly. Welcome.
Thank you, Wayne. Glad to be here with you today.
Tell us a little bit about your family. I've known you since you was a little kid. Share a little bit about your family with us.
Well, I had hardworking parents. They were Beckley area. My parents had worked together in the home, outside the home. And music was a big part of me growing up. My brother was a vocalist at the time, I guess he was born. He's 9 years older than me. Uh-huh. And I can always remember my brother singing. My dad was a guitarist, and he was always playing. So that was my earliest memories of my family, you know, just the music around the home and outside the home. I did, like I say, my dad was a working musician, and my brother was right there with him. They were always out playing somewhere, and it grew from there. So my earliest memories was music around home.
What kind of work did your dad do?
My dad was basically a salesman, a handyman, and of course, music was to supplement the income. So, but he was, that's what he did. My mom worked outside the home. She worked at Beckley Manufacturing, probably 10, 15 years. And that was my life around the house, is music and.
Well, I know your dad worked up the jewelry store for a while.
He did. He worked there, Berman's Jewelry.
Yeah.
And he sold and he repaired. Like I said, my dad was handy. There's nothing he couldn't fix or attempt to fix. And he worked on jewelry and rings and watches. Not so much the mechanics of a watch itself, but like bands and stuff like that, sizing things. He was just gifted in those areas. He wasn't afraid to tackle anything.
Yeah. Well, your mom was a Wyndon.
She was.
And the Wyndon family just lived close to where I lived. And I remember Don Wyndon and Danny Wyndon and Garnet Wyndon. I don't remember. I don't know.
There was a couple other sisters, Dolores and Univelle.
And your mother had a rare name, though. What?
Euthalie.
Where did that come from?
I have no idea. I really, that's a good question, Wayne, but Euthalie, and she, you know, U-T-H-O-L-E-E is how you spelt that.
Yeah.
And it was definitely different. It was definitely different.
What is she, did she go by that name?
She did.
She did.
Yeah. You know, a lot of family called her Sis, you know, as far as family goes. But outside, she was known as Euthalie.
Yeah. Well, now, Don, you know, he was a fireman for years and a farmer. And Danny was about the same age as my brother, Tommy. And didn't he work for the FBI or something?
Danny was a military man.
Okay.
And it was unclear really what Danny did. I'll be honest with you. I think he had something there to do whether FBI, CIA, or it was just undetermined. I just never really, and he may not have anything to do with it at all, Wayne. He was just, but he was a highly intelligent man. He, what's fun, talk about the music part with me. Just getting back to Danny for a second, but my dad played guitar, played a little bit of piano, played some accordion. My brother could sing, and Peanut would slap a few chords on the guitar, and he could sit down and play a little bit of piano. And I banged on piano, and I'd go to my grandmother's there on Bostic Avenue between Klaus and Allen Avenue. Uh-huh. And she had an old piano. I'd go in there. That's where I stayed in the summers because my parents both worked. Uh-huh. And I'd clang on that piano. And Danny was just a teenage boy living at home. And he'd get up grumbling at me for banging on that piano. Now, Danny was not a musician at all. But he came in one morning. He looked at me and said, "You got to quit banging on that piano." He's unique. He said, "I'll show you something." And he knew two boogies on that piano. And he showed me those boogies. Now, I was probably five, maybe 6 years old, six or seven, let's say. And he showed me these two boogies. He said, "Don't bang this piano. If you're going to play it and wake me up, you play something that's worth playing." Oh, it's just little diddlies. It was nothing rock and roll, but it was a couple little boogies, good exercises for me. And I practiced that, and I practiced that, and anywhere I'd go, had a piano, I would play that. And he also encouraged me to listen to what I was playing and try to form chords and stuff that blended. So, and I figured I'd got that from my dad and my brother, but, you know, they were always busy, and I was aggravating my uncle, and he wanted to get me out of his hair. So that's how I kind of started playing piano.
You guys lived right beside the nature shop. And back in those days, that was about the only place you could go look at fish and animals. The Murphy's had some fish, yes, and birds, but the nature shop had a little bit of everything. And then your family ended up buying that.
Yes. The nature shop was built, I think, in 52 or 53 from a man named Dixon out of Oak Hill. He also had a pet wholesale business where he sold pet supplies to Southern West Virginia and Kentucky and Ohio.
Who owned that?
I think his name was Owen Dixon.
Okay.
And so he owned, had that little building there, the nature shop, that was right beside my home where I grew up. There's businesses all through there. And he kept the place supplied with stuff out of the stores. You know, he had the wholesale, so he... And somewhere along the line, somewhere around 72, my mom was leaving Beckley Manufacturing, and she went down to help Mr. Dixon out. He needed some help. And before I knew it, my mom and dad bought the place.
How long did she have it? How long did she run it?
How long did my parents have the nature shop? Well, the highway, Department of Highways came through and took our home and the business both somewhere probably early 80s. It was the first round. They came through twice.
Yeah.
And like I said, that was all businesses all through that side. And they came out then when the road bought them out.
Yeah.
They basically retired from it.
Well, now she later used to do these bingo bus trips.
She did that two or three years before I realized that she was as involved with the bingos as she was, but she did. She organized trips and they'd go to Cherokee and they'd load a bus up. I don't know how many people, a busload, and they would go and stay the whole weekend and come home. And
that's when the bingo was really popular at the time. Of course, it's still around. The first time, like I say, you used to come down and hang around the neighborhood, but the first time that musically, and I don't know how this exactly started, but I remember going over your house after school and we were practice. So you had a small piano and I would sing and you would play, and I don't know how that first got started.
Well, I tell you, I thought about this a lot, Wayne, because you was trouble. Now, you really and truly, I don't remember. The first time around, you called me one day and you said, "Bobby, I'm going to bring some guys up. I want to start a band." Well, Wayne, all right, come on. And here you came, and I think you had Dickie, and I think you had Butch with you. And I don't remember who it was. And I was young, Wayne. At that particular time, I couldn't have been over 10 or 11 years old.
I'm not sure you were that old. But
well, I may have not been. Yeah, I may have not. I was young. And you want to start a band. I remember sitting in the living room and talking what we would do and all this stuff. But don't think we played any music. I think it was all talk. But then somewhere down the road, you called me again. I think I was in the seventh grade. But this time, I was already playing the piano a little bit more and a little bit more. And you called me again and said, John Tanner got a set of drums for Christmas. And we need to play some music. So I said, well, okay. So John just lived half a mile from where I lived there on Eisenhower. And it's right there in your neighborhood. And we go down there and we start playing. A boy by the name of, I think, Larry Lyons came for a while, played a little bit of guitar.
Yeah, I think he did.
And then all of a sudden, a boy, he said, I got another boy who can come over and play. And here comes Danny Pack. Danny Pack comes bringing a great big amplifier. And Danny could play bass and he could play guitar both. And that's when things really gelled for our little group when Danny Pack came along. We were able to really start putting some music together. Yeah. And I didn't know any music. I could hear chords. I knew how to build chords. So Danny would strum along, and the songs were simpler back then. But the production, a lot of songs we were doing, you know, just didn't have the production of today.
So we had to play Louie Louie.
We played Louie Louie and Twist and Shout and probably Long Tall Texan and, you know, just songs, just three chord pattern songs. But you had to know if sometimes you could sing it in C and next song you had to do it in F. And so you had to be able to adjust these things. So that got me going. And during that time, my parents realized that I was definitely able to play. So I had a piggy bank full of some money. And of course, my parents always supported me, what me and Peanut both, whatever we done. And they gave in, bought me a little keyboard, bought me a little electronic, I think it was a Whitehall portable organ. But that actually came after you and I played. When you and I played, I had to borrow a piano.
We
played.
Yeah, I think our group, we practiced a lot. Wasn't old enough to play in any clubs or anything like that. We were as good as some of them that were out there playing, but I think the only time we ever played, we played at a party one time. It was down in the basement. We didn't get paid anything, but it was just the fact that we got out to play a little bit. But you guys, John went on and learned to play several instruments himself. And the last time I saw him, of course, he's passed away now, but the last time I saw him, he was playing at a singing convention, a church singing convention. He was playing bass and did a real good job. And then Danny played with the Midnight Beats, and then he's played with several groups since then and still plays some recreationally and a little professionally. And you've spent quite a bit of time playing. I ended up singing with Lacey Aliff and Kendall Moore, David Miller, and that bunch for a little bit. And we played out some. They were still in high school, weren't old enough to get in clubs or anything, but we played a lot of high school homecoming dances and proms and stuff like that. And that lasted about a year and a half, 2 years. And those guys, I mean, Kendall Moore was extremely talented, you know, and Lacey Aliff, not playing music, but he made a career in music, you know, selling and this kind of stuff. And then David played for several groups. So it was kind of a kickstart. Let's go back just a second. Now, you went to Sylvia School. Did it go to the eighth grade when you went?
I was the last class for the eighth grade there.
Okay.
And then schools changed. New Woodrow was open. And I went Stratton for the ninth grade.
Yeah. At Sylvia, when I was in about the fourth grade, I think, they used to have a talent show. And kids would try to sing or say a poem or something like that. And then the teachers would pick a winner. And this is when your brother, Pina, was in the eighth grade, I think. Well, that particular year, the song that was out, it was actually a religious song, but it was played on the radio all the time. It's called "He's Got the Whole World in His Hands." Well, whoever was running the talent show, they didn't really screen it. So three people sang the same song different times, you know. But by that time, Peanut comes up there. He's the last one in there. And everybody knew he was going to be pretty good because we all knew. Well, that was the song he was going to sing. Boy. So it was the fourth time. But he just did it like a sing-along, you know, just get everybody singing. Yeah. And so, I mean, he got the whole, and it was kind of funny. I said, whoever's running that didn't do a very good job screening. But Pina put out a song, and you couldn't have been about 6 or 7 years old.
Yes, and right around 59, he had a manager. He actually had a man went out with him and tried to lay out a path for him, a career. And he played a lot of beaches. He did that recording. And Pina had a lot of exposure when he was 14 years old. I mean, you know, he's been my biggest inspiration.
I didn't think he had a driver's license because that guy used to come in the K&C Records.
Yes, it was.
And then that guy used to drive him around this little orange or red.
Yeah, yeah, thing. Good memory, Wayne. See, that was my first impression. And I lit up. You know, like I said, I was always around the music and everything. And when my brother came in from off the road, and they had that little car, and they had pictures of my brother and had the record taped up on the side of the windows. And I go, my brother has made it. My brother is big time. And I have, I'll just tell you, I've been around a lot of people with successful music people, musicians. And I never was really impressed with them. I mean, I admire them. I respect them. They are good. But my brother's the top. I always keep him at the top.
Well, you know, the song We Must Part, and then on the flip side, I can't remember the
name. My One True Love.
Yeah, My One True Love. You know, I've listened to that song. I used to sing it. I had bought that record. And I never could understand why it didn't really make it really big. Both sides, actually. And even now, the other side, My One True Love, I think, would be a hit on the beach.
Well, what happened during that time, payola, Wayne, you had to have money. And of course, Al Cicero was Peanut's manager, and he didn't have money. He was a working man, had a dream of helping a young boy to be successful. And but they went to a lot of radio stations and a lot of performance halls, and it just... If you had the coin to pass on, you could get something to listen to. Yeah. That was the name of the game back in the day. Yeah. But the recording, I listened to We Must Part here about a week ago, and it was good musicians, very good production. Like you say, it should have done something, but you had to have money.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of that way now, too.
It is.
I mean, you can go to Nashville and make a record, but if you're not the son of someone or whatever, you've got to have some cash and they'll sap your money down there.
At least be able to have cash to ride it out until you get lucky enough to do it shape or form.
Now, I remember when you were at Sylvia, was there any teachers or anyone that stood out that for you?
I like Mrs. Hedrick, sixth grade school teacher, and she had love for art. And as far as drawing and painting and stuff, I don't remember doing a lot of that other than given an outline, coloring something. But Mrs. Hedrick had a passion for the history of art. And she'd give us, four or five artists a week and gave us the history on them, their style, the era, what they were famous for, and... That lit me up. I look at paintings now, and I love going to art studio, which my wife is a great artist. So we go to art shows, and I admire people's work. Now that I get lit up on. And Miss Hedrick inspired me with art. I cannot draw. I'm not a painter. I've tried to paint. I'm not. But the history of art, I've always kind of had a hankering for.
Yeah. And, well, now, after we played together some with Danny and John, you called me once, and I went over and auditioned, I guess, with a group. You had Tony Payne, and I don't think y'all ever got started, though. I'm not sure exactly. He was in your garage, And Tony had played with a couple groups before. He played the drums, I think. And I don't know. I can't remember who else was in that bunch.
I don't remember either, Wayne. There's just a lot of musicians that came in and out of that time. I don't remember that exact time you're talking about.
I don't think y'all ever got started off the ground. I know I wasn't. What kind of music did you really like when you were growing up?
Well, in my early groups, after you and I played together, and I got with some Maxwell Hill boys. Paul Patrick was a drummer, and Mark Maddox was a vocalist, bass player. Guitar player named Jimmy Jones. And we end up with a couple of horn players. Donnie Boy and Mike Lutie played some sax. And we was doing a lot of soul music. And at that time, also, we were doing a lot of Hendrix, and was doing a lot of Stones, was doing a lot of Led Zeppelin. We really, that was where I was at musically. And we was getting some work. We were playing a supper club. We got any time, probably Dennis Pack wasn't playing there, we got in to play there. Uh-huh. And which, that was during a time in 66, 67, the music scene, the hippie scene was coming along, and it was kind of cool to play the supper club. But that was not good for me, probably not the environment for me to be around. My parents probably saw that pretty early, because I was definitely had the influence of, and I was always around older people as I was playing. But I enjoyed that style of music. And, of course, Peanut, my dad, was playing a club uptown called Raleigh. And that club was designed, beginning to do kind of dinner music, light rock. He wanted a business crowd, what Russ Billow was after at the Raleigh. Well, and I would play the supper club, and if I didn't come home, which my mom and dad was working the Raleigh, and so anyway, they got a handle on me. Started making me come to the club after I got finished playing supper club, wherever else I was playing. And I would sit in with Peanut, and I knew Peanut was in, being 9 years older than me, his musical style was your 50s style. Uh-huh. And my music, being 15, 16-year-old boy, the Beatles and all this was hitting me pretty hard. So I was able to come and sit in with them, and the music kind of grew. Next thing I know, I played with them. We played there 4 or 5 years.
How many nights a week did y'all play? You were the house band.
We played an average of 4 nights a week. I had played 5 nights a week, but we played many of 4 nights.
And your dad played guitar, right?
Yes, he did.
And what did Peanut play when
Peanut,
you came in?
Peanut started out playing a little piano. He's never considered himself a piano player, but which he could play piano. And whenever I kind of came along, he moved his piano off stage, and I was always into organ. And I should have grabbed a piano, but not having any musical training, I wish I'd had a piano at the same time I had an organ, but I didn't. And so Peanut was the lead vocalist. And you made a remark about Peanut at the talent show. When he sang, he pulled everybody in. Peanut had been gifted.
Oh, yeah.
Peanut was an entertainer. Could take 5 people and put them in the palm of his hand, or 500 people, and he'd work them. He knew how to work a crowd from the time he was 9 years old. And so we played the club, and Peanut, he worked that stage. He worked the crowd, and he knew how to read the songs. So.
That's interesting you brought that up, because there are a lot of talented musicians out there, and singers, but entertainers are people that just know how to handle a crowd and stuff, and a lot of musicians, good musicians, don't know how to do it.
They miss it. You got to connect with your crowd some way. You've got, and you know, and where Peanut was good too, if we were working a bar, I mean, he'd push the bar. Hey, go see Connie back there. She's working section 4, if special tonight. You got to work, got to know how to work. You see, here comes Wayne Bennett. Hey, Wayne, how you doing over here? You have to be able to work at front. And like I said, a lot of musicians, they'd stand there and play, and they miss it. They do miss it.
Have you sang a whole lot?
I don't have vocals. My brother got all the vocals. I never had breath. My breathing's never been good. And he always got so much spotlight singing. I just let him have it because he was good at it. And I focused on music, which my early days in music, I was serious about my music, but where I had a pretty good ear and I could play, I had a lot of pats on the back and built up a lot from friends and family that probably gave me a big head and probably gave me a lot more confidence than I really had, than my abilities. And that's good and it's bad. So I didn't work hard at my music. And I did not work hard at my music. And I didn't start working hard at my music to probably 12 years ago, 15 years ago, to really want to be a better musician on a better level.
Yeah. Of course, Peanut had started early with the Teen Tones and all that, but Russ Billow that ran the Raleigh.
Yes, he did.
I went to Raleigh a few times. I didn't go too often. Went a couple times when you guys were playing. Then I went one time. We went one time. It was snowing like crazy, and they had a band in there. I can't remember who it was now, but it was crazy. But Russ kind of handled some of the discipline by himself, didn't he?
Russ was a unique man. You know, he owned a club over in Oak Hill area. That was a rough club. It was upstairs, and it was basically a beer joint. It was a bar. It was a party bar, and it was a lot of rough people came through. And Russ was a man that just knew how to keep control of the crowd. So when he opened the Raleigh up, like I say, you had the Char, which is an up-class restaurant. And you had Town and Country Drive and Joe Herrera, who had Town and Country, who had later put the old Sid Club in.
Yeah.
And Russ wanted an upper class restaurant club. He did not want what he had in Oak Hill. And so he opened the Raleigh up. Like, so I was kind of young, and this is a story I kind of understood. He actually ran a shuttle during the day to the business. Beckley was booming. He ran a shuttle to bring people up to the club during the day for lunch, and he put it like a smorgasbord of food out. So he tried to build that and a dinner crowd, and it caught on to a degree, but he never had that feeling that you would get at the Char. That's my perspective. Now, that was my perspective. And again, in the early part of that, Peanut and my dad would go up, they'd play light country, light rock, and did a lot of dinner music, did soft, just dinner music. And then if the dinner kind of died, Payne would say, Russ, let me start pumping the music up a little bit. We'll start having, you know. So he did. They gave into it. So they started pushing the dance side of the club. And then by the time I got involved with them and brought another level of music, but this time Creedence Clearwater and Chicago and a lot of these groups that I was playing, I knew all this music. So we just pulled all that music together. Before you knew it, we 10:30 at night, we'd have a packed house of 300 or 400. When you have a house of 300 or 400, there's attentions and you add alcohol and everything going on. Russ always had a half a dozen men sitting around in his bar, and he didn't tolerate anything. He'd stop it in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like I said, I wasn't up there that much. But I'd heard different things, you know, that they handled everything pretty well. What relation is he to Joe Holly?
They're brothers. They're brothers, yes.
And, of course, the Joe Holly and Jody and Kenny and your brother Peanut, they dealt cars, sold cars and trucks. And you ever get into the car business?
No. I've always kind of been focused on music and pets. See, as time went on, I got into the pet business. My wife and I, I have a very talented wife, and I still held on to my music, but I wasn't playing. I got out of the bars for a long time. I'm a Christian man. I got involved in church. I knew that it's what I needed to do for my marriage, for myself, And that's the direction I felt led, and that's what I done. But, yeah, the music.
Now, how old were you when you got married?
21, 22.
And
I got an anniversary coming up here on the 11th. Be married 48 years.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
We just celebrated one. It was our 53rd. And that's why we went down to see Corn again.
Oh, there you go. That sounds like a good thing to do.
I told Diane, I said, I wanted to hear some horns. And we got to hear the horns.
Yeah.
They were great. But now you... of course, you got married, and we're going to hopefully get to talk with your wife in another interview, and you guys talk a little bit more about your business and your family and things like that. So we don't want to get in there and cut too much out. But so the nightlife wouldn't fit into the having a good marriage. Have you ever thought about writing any songs, or have you done that?
I have worked with lots of writers, Wayne, and I've contributed some. I'm not a writer, but I've had a lot of writers use me for the building a sound around their songs. The songs should tell a story, but the music's got to pad it. And they want some color around that song that they've written. So I've done that, and I've done quite a bit of studio work. And I mean, I've recorded on probably 100 different songs.
Wow.
And but nothing big time, but just, you know, that's just what I've done.
Now, I know you were with a group, and it may still be, I don't know, a contemporary Christian rock group, Ezekiel's Vision.
That was a good run.
And you guys had a CD, and who was in that group?
Danny Kincaid played drums, Bill Wise played bass, Dave Saunders. Was
how
the main
long were y'all together?
We were going about 10 years.
Wow! And you had a couple CDs.
We did two CDs, and we played a lot of camps for kids. We did a lot of private functions, and it was just it's a good bonding time. Like I say, we were all Christian men, and we all had the same desires. And Dave Saunders probably he writes from the heart Christian music, and he would come in with something out of his heart, and we just pick up on it and was able to arrange it and put some pretty good songs together. But it was a time Christian music's hard at that time. You couldn't get any church. It was a Christian rock band. So, you know, there's a lot of churches in the area would look as though, well, you can't play, you can't bring drums in here. And you're too loud. You can't do that in here. Well, so we didn't. That's fine. We still had other opportunities. Lord made ways for us to play other opportunities, which is fine. And since then, a lot of churches have opened up now to your praise and worship, which I do every Sunday. I play praise and worship, and I've been doing praise and worship for the past 15 years at least. And that's my heart's desire right now. I really enjoy that. I'm getting ready to play some keyboards for Billy Payne, and I enjoy, he's a country artist, top of the line. I look forward to doing this, but my heart's desire is, for me personally, is to serve the Lord and use my talent for His glory, not mine. And some days I hit a home run, some days I strike out. So
we go to the Faith Community Church, and I like the contemporary music. And there's some very talented people that at our church. I mean, they change some of the musicians quite weekly, you know, and singers give everybody an opportunity. But I like a traditional every once in a while.
You
know, I mean, I'd like to hear some of the old hymns every once in a while. But I'm the old guy, you know, and I would say that probably half the people that go to our church is under 30 years old.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that's what they grew up with, was a contemporary. And it's good. I mean, it's a good thing. A few years ago, you were in on the show, which we watch a lot, comes on the public broadcasting, Song in the Mountains. How did you get hooked up there? And it's out of Marion, Virginia. Great show.
Well, I was playing keyboards and accordion. for a gentleman named Clinton Collins. Clinton Collins is one of the top writers in West Virginia. I mean, and he had won some writing festivals, and he used Randy Fielder, who was also an East Beckley boy right down the street from you. Randy played drums and played some bass for Clinton and kind of hooked me up with Clinton. And it was not really bluegrass. You can't call what we did bluegrass, which we had, even though we used banjos and mandolins and I played accordion. Clinton's writing is just spot on, great voice, good personality. He knows how to work the crowd. And we were asked to play.
How did you guys do anything else, or just?
We played a lot of festivals. We played a lot of different shows. Clinton,
how long were you together?
I played with the Creek Boys. We were together for about a year. Creek Boys were together for about 4 years. And about the last year, I came along and I played with them for about a year. And from out of that, then Clinton's quite a writer, and he wanted to go for more of an Americana style. And so we started branching off where I played a little bit more keys. I still played a lot of accordion. I'm not an accordionist per se, but I play accordion. And Clinton just had the connection, and I'm with a lot of top talent. Uh-huh. And I'm just a player in a group. So I just accept that, you know.
Now, you also played with a Danley band.
I played with Danley band. We played together about 4 years, at least together.
He still has a band, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's doing a lot of solo work right now.
Yeah.
I actually, in 2010, 2011, I played with TaylorMade. I did about 75 shows with TaylorMade. I was asked to set in with them. So I did, and I played about 75 shows with them.
Wow. And you appreciated the interview we had with Danny Bailey.
Oh, yeah. Well, Dan's top of the line. He's top shelf material and a very respected musician here in town.
Now, that Danley band, Jamie Weeks played, I guess, Jarvis Williams. Did he play with
Jarvis Williams and Jason Brown and Tommy Akerd.
Okay.
Yeah, we all played together.
Now, over the years, what's one of the biggest changes you've seen in the music business? I mean, you started back in the 60s, basically, and now.
The biggest issue I have with music in general is overproduction. With computers, back in the day, you had a four-piece or five-piece group, and they recorded, that's pretty much what you got. Sometimes you'd have a guitar player come in, lay another guitar part down. Back in the day, we might bring in extra singers in. But today, the music for a keyboard player, guys will sit down with one keyboard and write a part and take another keyboard and steal some sounds. And then they take it to computer, and they've got access to thousands of, and they do layers of stuff and try to figure out what somebody's doing. Sometimes I feel like it's overproduced.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got your engineers and producers that I've always, when I listen to a song, early days, I try to pick out every instrument and every part that was in that song. And I listen to it. If it's a cowbell, or if you had, was there three vocalists doing parts, or was there four? In this day and time, you cannot tell where it's beginning and ending. Other than your producers, when you hear piano players, then the piano completely disappear out of the song. You hear it way, way back in the background playing, but it's not really in the mix because the song's out here in front of you. Then all of a sudden, here the piano player comes back in with another part, which is part of production and creativity, and that's okay, but a lot of times music gets buried with music, with production.
Yeah. Anything you would do over if you had an opportunity to do different?
I really wish that I'd had some music instruction. I wish I had been trained. I never had training. I wish I had. I didn't get it. I wanted to play horn. I wanted to be in a band. And again, Sylvia's school going through the eighth grade. Didn't have a whole lot of music opportunities at Sylvia. And when I got into junior high, that summer, while band practice was taking place, I'm laying in the hospital having surgery. So when I go to school that year in the ninth grade, I wanted to go to band. I went to the band director, and he said, well, these other schools got kids that's been seventh, eighth grade, Park Junior High or Beckley Junior High. You had players come out. They done had 2 years of music. I was put off in school to join the school band because I wasn't there when you were supposed to be because I was in the hospital, and I didn't have the experience that the other seventh, eighth graders had coming into the ninth grade. So that was pretty disappointing. And then I got into Woodrow. Didn't have a whole lot of guidance there. I had one teacher who showed me any interest at all as far as me in education and even musically. She really tried to encourage me to get some training. And again, I had that mentality, well, I can play. I had the desire to play. And again, I was probably built up a lot more than I needed to be built up. Somebody should have stood building me up, encouraged me to be trained. I wish I'd had training.
Yeah. Is there any chance ever that the Hallmarks have a get back together? There's only two of you, I guess.
No, well, my father has passed, and I dreamed about that. The bass player is living right here in Beckley now, Bill Chapman, who was the bass player. And he still, I think, plays some around in church. Dave Peraldo, who is the drummer, Dave's got to be 77, 78 years old. And he's in Austin, Texas. And he's a working musician right today. He plays, he's playing some big country bands. I mean, he's working about every weekend. And I'm sure that comes and goes. And then Peanut, my brother's living in Myrtle Beach right now, and he's content just singing around. I don't think he looks for anything. But as far as the Hallmarks go, I dreamed for years. Just before my dad passed away in 2012, the Hallmarks all got together for a little reunion at my house. And I had my studio set up at the time. I had it ready for us to walk in and play drums and everything. But at that time, my dad was already slipping away, Wayne, mentally. And even though he played his guitar a little bit every day here, well, not every day, he still played his guitar some. I felt that to take him over for us to try to play, I didn't want to put him in any kind of an embarrassing situation. So I just left it alone. But I dreamed up to that point of us all getting together. And I had considered, I'd say this, and I talked to Dave Peraldo, I've got enough connections in studios right now where Bill Chapman would probably come play bass parts down for me, and I get my brother to come sing, and I'm sure there's a lot of guitar players I could get right now to come do guitar work for us. But then to get that to Dave Peraldo to play the drums down, which he probably needs one of the earlier players in anyway, but Dave said he just couldn't pull it off, so it's not going to happen. But I was hoping I could get a recording.
Well, you know, there, even if you get a few of them, we watched Kool and the Gang. There was only two original members there, and Kool was still alive, and he plays bass. But and as far as it, if you wanted to make a recording, you know, with technology today, you could stay right here in Beckley, and Peanut could be in Myrtle Beach.
Yes, absolutely.
And, there's guys can do that stuff, but. Besides the music part, is there what's on your bucket list? What's something you haven't done you'd like to do, if anything?
Oh, that's a good one, Wayne. I don't have a lot of drive in me to be successful. I am successful who I am because I'm alive today. But it's another level of music. I don't look for it. I play every engagement as though it would be my last one, and I take my last. Seriously, when I play, I've tried to play the very best I can to be to support the song, support the musicians, and whoever I'm playing for. But I don't. I've done quite a bit of traveling. If we get my wife on here, we'll go into that. She She had managed a group here a few years ago that we did a tour. We did 200 concert tour throughout the United States. So travel, I mean, it don't excite me. We've been a lot of places, and I like the easy life. I got chickens. Oh, I fuss and grumble about having chickens, but you get out of the morning, and I've got 5 acres. We cut a lot of grass. And I'm content just really doing nothing, not to say that I'm lazy.
Well, I know you got a new Fender Rhodes.
Well, now that
you got to have some plans there.
I play it. Well, it's probably it weighs about 130 pounds, so I'll probably never carry it out. If I was doing a big show like a Song of the Mountain, I'd get that sucker on stage because I would want it there. But to go out here and play a local bar, I will never take it out. But it's right now giving me creativeness. You asked me about writing. I am pushing myself to write a little bit right now. And the Fender Rhodes is bringing that out at me right now. It's something new. I like playing. I like, I cook. And I just like to enjoy life, enjoy my wife's time. I'm very fortunate. Like I said, I've been married 48 years on July the 11th. And I'm very thankful for my wife and our marriage.
Living the good life.
Well, you know, of course, when I was younger and being a musician, she's had her hands full at times. But we've worked together and we've worked hours together. We worked our business together. We shared church together. All of our interests have been together. So I just like to continue trying to have as good of a marriage as I could possibly have and enjoy each day and each breath that I have. I feel fortunate. One last thing I'll say. This time, 32 years ago, I'm laying in the hospital with cancer and came close to death 2 or 3 times. So with that being said, I think about that every June and July, starting in May, how blessed I am, health. Fortunate I am that I am live right now. So I embrace my walk with the Lord and my marriage, and I want to embrace today. Even though I worry about tomorrow, I try not to live for tomorrow. I try to live for this moment.
You've done well, and I appreciate you coming and talking to us, and we'll get your wife on here hopefully in the near future, and a very talented person herself, and anytime you want to come back,
okay.
Give me a yell.
Thank you, Wayne. I mean, I've enjoyed it. Like, you was an inspiration to me from the time I was 10 years old. You always had the Sandlot ball games, and you always, I think, coming to your house, I'll tell you this real quick, come home with you. You had little baskets all on every door facing. You had some place where you could shoot a ball or a wad of paper, and we'd play for hours. I got one question I want to ask you, if you remember. This is for Wayne Bennett. We were, you're probably 3 or 4 years older than me, I would take, and I'm 70.
I'll be 73 in October.
Okay. And I was down there one day, and you looked at me and said, Bobby, we need to go in business together. You remember this?
No, I
don't. Do you know what business you wanted to go into?
What kind of business?
You said, Bobby, we need to open up a gas station.
Oh, really?
You told me, yes. Let's think about this. I think there's money in gas. I think we ought to open up. Why don't we do this? And you were serious. And I go, okay, Wayne, we'll do that. Well, it didn't happen, Wayne. Sorry.
I'm glad we didn't get in the gas business. Yeah. All right. Well, appreciate you, man. And anytime you want to come back, like I said, love to have you. And anybody else out there would like to be on our program, you can contact me at awbennett50@gmail.com. We'd love to have you. And remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. And this is Wayne Bennett saying God bless you.